morning, Cascadia. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Today is Tuesday, August 25th, 2009. And this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Max Andre.
The tribal fishing season is officially open. We talk with representatives of the Intertribal Fish Commission.
Alaska Senator Mark Begich is hosting a climate change tour of his state's hotspots.
And Pittsburgh braces for the G8 summit.
Portland area weather today, cloudy, drizzle, or even rain this morning. Highs in the 70s tonight. Mostly cloudy on the coast, clear inland, lows 40 to 45. Tomorrow looks like the same.
And first, we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Tribal fishers from the Nez Perce, Umatilla, Warm Springs, and Yakima tribes opened their 2009 fall commercial season today for the sales of Columbia River fish. The fall fishery is often viewed as the backbone of the tribe's fishing economy because of its reliability. My guests today are Sarah Thompson and Stuart Ellis with the Intertribal Fish Commission. Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Good morning.
Thank you so much. Talk about a little bit about what this means for the tribes.
Well, this is the tribe's largest commercial fishing opportunity throughout the year, and many of our tribal fishermen earn the majority of all of the income that they'll earn all year during the next 3 to 5 weeks. And so economically, it's enormously important for tribal members that live along the river, for tribal members that live on the reservations, and also for the general communities up and down the Columbia River where the tribal members shop and spend their money.
And what's the prognosis for this season? Does it look good?
Yeah, we're predicting a Chinook salmon run that is right around the 10-year average. And so, and that should provide a good fishing opportunity for Chinook salmon. We've been getting very high steelhead counts at Bonneville Dam, and we've already upgraded the steelhead run. It's going to be above average. It could be a near record run for part of the steelhead run. And we're also predicting a very good coho salmon run this fall. So we should have plenty of fish to catch, and we'll have tribal members selling fish starting right about now, up and down the gorge at places like Cascade Locks and at Lone Pine and the Dalles and some of their other fishing sites.
Just wrapping up, anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
No, just that it's, there's going to be a lot of tribal members out on the Columbia. You may see them out there, and we'll have a lot of fish for sale over the next few weeks. There'll be some nice, fresh, beautiful fall Chinook salmon, so.
Thank you so much for that. My guests have been Sarah Thompson in the background and Stuart Ellis with the Intertribal Fish Commission. Thanks both of you for that.
Thank you.
A NOAA laboratory is teaming with the U.S. Coast Guard to test for rising emissions of carbon dioxide and methane in Alaska, which could potentially increase global warming. Recent observations suggest the air above Alaska may already hold the first signs of an increase in greenhouse gas emissions that could contribute to global warming. Billions of tons of carbon are buried in the frozen Arctic tundra. Scientists say the warming tundra could dry out, exhaling large amounts of heat-holding carbon dioxide. Melting ice could also form pools and lakes, allowing microbes to consume buried organic matter and release large amounts of methane. Methane is 25 times more powerful than carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas, though its lifetime in the atmosphere is significantly shorter.
Well, if it keeps coming, though, the short lifetime in the atmosphere isn't going to give us much time to find a place, a new planet to run to.
It certainly is.
Senator Mark Begich of Alaska says that he'll host four other senators on a climate change tour this weekend. The senators will see retreating glaciers, forests damaged by invasive species, and drying wetlands. They'll also visit the North Slope to see the Prudhoe Bay oil field. Begich recently introduced a package of seven bills dealing with the impacts of climate change in America's Arctic.
Environmental and animal rights groups have been granted a last-minute hearing before a federal judge on their request to stop upcoming wolf hunts in the Northern Rockies. Wolves across much of the region were removed from the endangered species list earlier this year.
And now we speak with Mark Auerbach. He's the spokesperson for District 5 up in Clatsop County, where the debate has been intensifying in recent years over the siting of liquefied natural gas terminals on the Columbia River. We all know about Radwood Landing. Warrenton is also in play. Currently, the county commissioners who signed off on this idea have been facing three now recall campaigns. Mark Orbach is the spokesperson for the District 5 recall campaign of Anne Samuelson, which in and of itself is a very complicated issue. Good morning, Mark, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning.
So talk a little bit about this recent. This is the third, and there are five commissioners. Talk a little bit about this most recent recall effort.
Well, these are all homegrown efforts. So there was an effort that started simultaneously in District 1 and 5, but most recently in District 2, Patricia Roberts District, a group has come forward to start a recall on against her. They filed last week, but as is typical, the files are quite persnickety, and their first attempt was rejected. But they should be refiling in the next 48 hours, and we expect them to have their approved petitions shortly.
And how do these recall efforts affect the efforts to stop LNG from being sited there in your community?
Well, as your listeners may know, the original land use decision by the county, which was voted on 4-1 in favor, but was went against the popular opinion, went against the recommendation of staff, was remanded by LUBA, the Land Use Board of Appeals, and recently came back to the county commission to be reheard. And they once again, despite overwhelming evidence and popular opinion, decided to approve it once again, and it went back, and we expect it to be appealed once more. And, of course, the idea is to have a different board of county commissioners hear it the next time it comes back from LUBA.
In other words, county commissioners actually represent the intentions of the people who elected them.
That's right. Recall is the tool to use if your representative democracy is no longer representing you.
Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Mark Orbach, the spokesperson for the District 5 campaign. Thanks a lot, Mark.
You're welcome. Listeners can get more information at did5.org.
Thanks.
The Edmonds City Council, which voted to ban plastic grocery bags, expects no political fallout from the Seattle vote against the 20-cent bag fee. The Edmonds ban is scheduled to take effect next August. Councilman Strom Peterson told the Everett Herald the outright ban is the better route. Edmonds may be influenced by nearby Mukilteo. Mukilteo City Councilman Tony Tinsley has asked the city staff to look into the bag ban issue. He favors a ban rather than a tax.
And an addendum to that, in San Jose, California, the city is moving a step closer to banning plastic and most paper bags at major stores. Okay, so we've got Washington there. We've got California on board with the ban on plastic bags. Hello, Oregon, where are you? Auto dealers will get more time to submit their cash for clunkers deals to the government for repayment after the Department of Transportation extended the deadline for filing claims. Dealers had until an hour ago to file the paperwork they need to get repaid for the cash for clunkers credits of up to $4,500. Alas, clunker money is buying up Toyotas and Hondas more than Chevys and Fords. And again, it's a techno-financial fix for a climate problem that isn't going to be driving away very soon.
The Grays Harbor Public Utility District is considering taking part in an emergency Energy Northwest plan to build a new nuclear power plant near Richland. KXRO reports PUD commissioners were presented yesterday with a plan for a plant that could be producing electricity in about 9 years. Jack Baker with Energy Northwest says nine other utilities have expressed interest in the project and bet money that somehow the developers will find a way to greenwash the project.
Somehow, somewhere, they're going to come up with an ad campaign telling us all how green this idea is. Wait and see. The G20 summit takes place this September 25th. That's a month away, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Already, the lines are being drawn. Local law enforcement claiming to have learned from the 1999 WTO protests in Seattle are bringing 4,000 additional police in. Social justice organizers are also preparing to take the message of the oppressed to the table. My guest today is Melissa Minnick, Communications Director at the Thomas Merton Center in Pittsburgh. Good morning, Melissa, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
What sort of preparations are activist groups developing right now?
Well, we've had a lot of planning meetings, a lot of which are just to have open communication with one another because we have so many groups that are organizing around so many different issues. So there's a lot of planning for specific events, summits, organizing in that sense.
The infamous protest cages that have popped up at various events of this sort, where the power brokers of the world convene to essentially decide our futures for us. Mm-hmm. What about protest cages? How are they managing what they expect to be fairly sizable protests and demonstrations?
Well, are you talking about the free speech zones?
Yes.
That are in place? Well, that's something that one local politician has lobbied for, but that we really do not want to have, because that's not freedom of speech in the least. Freedom of speech is being able to speak anywhere, not just in a specified area. But so we've been fighting for a number of different permits, including, you know, the permit to march, to have tent cities, to have a protest as close to the convention center as we can get, but in a nonviolent fashion.
What do you expect the turnout to be?
I actually have no idea. It's really hard to say at this point because there are so many groups that are organizing on this, and they're all calling on their national and international networks.
Give us an idea of some of these affinity groups that you expect to see.
Okay, well, the big march is going to be happening on Friday on the 25th, the second day of the summit. But other groups include, there's a Three Rivers Climate Convergence, United for Environmental Justice, which they are actually protesting the International Coal Conference taking place right before the G20 summit. But so they're also organizing around the G20. There's another group, it's a national network called Bail Out the People. And they are organizing. They're having a tent city in the Hill District, which is an economically impoverished area in the city that has a very rich history. But they're calling nationally as well.
So will there be 4,000 additional police? Do you believe that sort of troop buildup is justified?
It's really hard to say. I think that when you're dealing in numbers, I mean, people can justify anything. I think that what really needs to be justified is what kind of training is going into these officers, and what kind of communication is being conveyed to them as well, and how is everybody being represented? Is it being portrayed as being very black and white, very, you know, us versus them, or is there open communication about the many issues that surround the G20?
Anything else you'd like our listeners to know about this?
I don't think so. Just if you're interested, come to Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much. Frequently, people in Portland do that. They do show up at these things. Thank you so much. My guest has been Melissa Minnick, Communications Director at the Thomas Merton Center in Pittsburgh. Thanks again, Melissa.
And this has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, August 25th, 2009. The engineer is Janet Anderson. Trillium Shannon is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director, in for Kathleen Stevenson, who is out on sabbatical. The editor is Chris Andre. I'm Max Andre.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to All Natural, Free Range, Non-Syndicated KBOO Radio. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up at 10:15 is Flashpoints Investigative News with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, D-May Roberts presents part two of the two-part Flash Fish Trap special featuring the fish trap writers gathering at Wallawa Camp and Retreat Center in Joseph, Oregon. At 11:30, Eva Lake speaks with Gavin Shetler about Milepost 5 and the Manner of Art.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned and have a good day.